Revelation chapter 13, I'll begin reading at verse 1. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. I'll read down through verse 10. Not take time to go back over some of the things that we mentioned last Wednesday evening in our study. I hope you are keeping up with us. If you haven't been, you can check back on the recordings on the website and catch up with us. Remember, my understanding of the book of Revelation has to do with the idea that it was written during a time before 70 AD, before the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, and its primary emphasis throughout the book is the destruction of apostate Israel and the city of Jerusalem by the Romans in 70 AD. In chapter 13, this chapter, the chapter before, of course, begins the last major section of the book of Revelation. Before this, we saw the opening of the seven seals and the sounding of the seven trumpets. We saw a view of the desolation of apostate Israel and the city of Jerusalem. But in these chapters, we're going to begin to see that again in different snapshots or different viewpoints of the same thing taking place. In this chapter, I guess we might say that we're seeing those who are involved that brings about the destruction of apostate Israel and the city of Jerusalem. Chapter 13, beginning in verse 1, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet were like feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshipped the dragon and gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?' And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. And then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints." Of course, the beast that rises up out of the sea is connected with the dragon that we saw in the earlier chapter. The dragon, of course, is Satan or the devil. The beast that rises up out of the sea, we said last Wednesday evening, is the Roman Empire. He was given a mouth to speak. That is, the emperor speaks for the empire. He speaks for the kingdom. That was the mouth under consideration. I want to pick up in our exposition of the text about verse 8. "All who dwell on the earth will worship him," that is, worship the beast from the sea, worship the Roman Empire. Note this, "all who dwell on the earth." Now I want to suggest to you, as I have on other occasions, here the word is translated earth, when it would probably be better if it had been translated land. So all who dwell in the land will worship him. What land is under consideration? Of course, the land of Israel is under consideration. Not everyone who was on earth during this time worshiped the Roman emperors and the Roman Empire. We sometimes paint in our picture, in our mind, the picture that the only people that existed on earth at this particular time in history were those who lived in the Roman Empire. That's not true. The rest of the world was populated. So why is it that the translators continually translate the word earth? As I've suggested to you before, there's a lot of religiously minded people that want it translated earth because it supports their doctrine and supports their teaching. because they see the things happening here as all over the world, all over the earth. And especially if you study any premillennial doctrine, you'll come to understand that that be the case. This word has to be earth. It has to be the world in general. No, it doesn't have to be. It's better translated land. All who dwell in the land will worship him. Worship who? Worship the Roman Empire. And let's define this word worship. Sometimes we think worship has to do with offering a sacrifice and bowing before one. But one might be worshiped in a number of different ways. When you show adoration towards someone, esteem towards someone, when you praise someone, it could be acts of worship. We praise God in song. We're not bowing before him literally, but we're offering up worship to him in the songs that we sing. When we pray, we're offering up worship. So worship takes many forms. So don't get the concept and idea in your mind that when they worship the image, that everybody was bowing down at the altar of Caesar. That wasn't the case. As a matter of fact, sometimes when we study the book of Revelation, we think emperor worship is all that's involved in the book of Revelation in regard to worshiping the beast. But you have to remember that the Greco-Roman world was filled with polytheists. That is, worshipers of many gods. The Roman Empire allowed the worship of many gods. Caesar didn't put you to death just because you worshipped Zeus or because you worshipped Athena or some other god. They didn't do that. They didn't care if you worshipped them. And so when you worship the Roman Empire, well, you could worship him in many different ways. You might say that the unbelieving Jews in the city of Jerusalem worshipped Rome. In what sense? Well, what did the unbelieving Jews do? They influenced Pilate to put Christ to death. Why? Because they brought up to Pilate that they only had one king and Caesar was their king. So, could you not say that they actually worshipped Rome when they recognized the Roman Empire and the king instead of Jesus as king? And so, let's not get the idea that worship is just a bowing down at an altar or offering a sacrifice. It is much more than that. But note here in Revelation 13 and verse 8, all who dwell, note this, in the land will worship him. All who dwell in the land of Israel will worship the Roman Empire. Now who's under consideration there when all who is in the land will worship the Roman Empire? But we know the text tells us that not all, absolute all, in the land of Israel will worship the Roman Empire. Who in the land of Israel will not worship the Roman Empire? Those in whose names have been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Christians will not worship the Roman Empire. But everybody else in the land of Israel will. What does that tell us? Apostate Israel is under consideration. Later on, the Gentiles are going to be brought into the picture. So everybody who was not a Christian, whose name wasn't in the Lamb's book of life, they would worship the Roman Empire. Not necessarily bowing down at the altar of some Roman god, but nonetheless, they would subject themselves in obedience to the rule of Rome in their life. Revelation 13 in verse 9, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. Now we saw this phrase over and over uttered by Jesus in chapter 2 and 3 to each one of the seven churches of Asia. He would end by saying, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. Remember what that word hear means? Pay close attention to what has been said. As a matter of fact, not only pay close attention to what has been said, but conform to that which you hear, that is, obey. Everyone has ears to hear, and therefore the purpose of hearing with the intention of obeying. And so it is used here. Revelation 13 and verse 10. This is the reading in the King James, or near the King James, in the New King James. Maybe a little different reading in the English Standard Version, New International Version, and others that some might be using. Revelation 13 and verse 10. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. Now, in order to understand this, and it might be understood in a couple of different ways, some understand it as, well, since the Roman Empire was just mentioned in the previous verses, they are the ones who are seeking to take the Christians into captivity. They are the ones who will kill with the sword. And so, since they're taking Christians into captivity, they themselves will go into captivity. And since they're killing by the sword, they themselves will be killed by the sword. That's the understanding of many people. That's not my understanding of it. My understanding of it is those who are under consideration are those who are immediately mentioned in Revelation 13 and verse 8. All who dwell on the earth will worship him. That is, all who worship the Roman Empire. Well, who would that be? Apostate Israel. Because the Christians, whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life, they're not worshiping the Roman Empire. So who's going to go into captivity? Apostate Israel is going to be destroyed. They're going to be taken into captivity. They're going to be slain with the sword. As a matter of fact, this is the exact same kind of language that Jeremiah the prophet used, or should I say that God used through Jeremiah the prophet to the people of Jeremiah's day. Now remember, Jeremiah is in the city of Jerusalem, and that's where he prophesies from during the time that the Babylonians come and destroy the city of Jerusalem and take the people away into Babylonian captivity. And so here in Jeremiah 15, in verse 1 and following, that's where Revelation 13 and verse 10, that's where it's not necessarily taken from, but it's an allusion back to Jeremiah 15, verse 1 and following. Jeremiah 15 in verse 1. Then the Lord said to me, this is what God said to Jeremiah, even if Moses and Samuel stood before me, my mind would not be favorable toward this people, the people of Israel at that time. Cast them out of my sight and let them go. And it shall be, if they say to you, where shall we go? Then you shall tell them. This is what Jeremiah is supposed to tell the people of Israel. The people who's going to be carried away into Babylonian captivity and the people who are going to be killed with the sword during that time. This is what he is to tell them. Thus says the Lord, such as are for death to death, and such as are for the sword to the sword, and such as are for the famine to the famine, and such as are for the captivity to the captivity. I will appoint over them four forms of destruction, says the Lord. The sword to slay, the dogs to drag, the birds of the heavens and the beast of the earth to devour and destroy. I will hand them over to the trouble, to all kingdoms of the earth, because of Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah, king of Judah, for what he did in Jerusalem. So did you get that? So the people who was causing captivity would go into captivity. People who were killing with the sword would be killed with the sword. That was the people of Jeremiah's day. I'm going to suggest to you that Revelation 13 and in verse 10 alludes to that. And the one who leads into captivity is going to go into captivity. Apostate Israel is. The Romans didn't go into captivity. The Romans weren't slain with the sword. As a matter of fact, the Roman Empire continued for hundreds of years later. Remember? But during this particular period of time, who went into captivity and who was killed with the sword? Apostate Israel was. And so, those whose names have been written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world, what are they going to have during this particular period of time? Because most of them are Jews as well. They're going to have patience. steadfastness, endurance. Note this, here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Here is, that little phrase, here is, means this calls for, or what is needed in this situation is patience, endurance, steadfastness, perseverance. That's what's going to be needed from the saints during this particular period of time. Revelation 13 and verse 11, the scene changes. We saw this in the opening remarks of this chapter when he said, "And I saw," and now he uses that phrase again. "Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth," and let's read this complete text to the end of the chapter. "Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he has granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. And that on no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. This number is 666. Verse 11, Revelation 13. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. I saw another. There's that word, another. Matter of fact, we saw that word in our study last Sunday morning. John 14 and verse 16, when Jesus said to his apostles, "I will give you another comforter." Remember what that Greek word was? It's allos. It means another of the same sort, another of the same kind. So this beast is of the same sort and same kind as the first beast, the one that came up out of the sea. So I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. And note this, he had two horns. Remember, horns, again, represent power. Two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. Two horns like a lamb, like a lamb. Now, it's possible that that word lamb there could be understood as a ram, because literally lambs did not have horns, but we're looking at figurative language here, metaphorical language. So it's possible that it could be a lamb, but it could be a ram. We read in the Old Testament of rams with two horns, different places. The horns, of course, represent power, but it has insignificant power, you might say, compared to the power of the sea beast. And he speaks like a dragon, no doubt, a reference to that old dragon we noted back in chapter 12, that fiery red dragon. It's identified as Satan and the devil. So he spoke like the devil. What does the devil do? When the devil speaks, he lies. Remember, that's what Jesus says. He's been a liar and a murderer from the beginning. So he speaks like the devil. He opens his mouth and he tells lies. That's what he does. Of course, the lamb, we have a picture here of a, you might say, a lamb, a docile animal, and then you have a dragon that evidently is represented as Satan in the context. Revelation 12 and verse 3, another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, that great fiery red dragon that's identified as devil and Satan in verse 9 of that chapter. He's also mentioned in chapter 13, verse 2. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon, that is Satan, gave him his power, his throne and authority. That is, he gave the Roman Empire his power and authority. And so here, this beast speaks like the dragon. He speaks like Satan. He's a liar from the beginning. This beast is coming up out of the earth. Now, I want you to, you could even look in this context to the end of the chapter, and this beast that comes up out of the earth is never referred to again as a beast in this chapter. You only see him referred to by pronouns in this chapter. And as a matter of fact, in the later chapters of Revelation, he'll never be referred to as a beast that comes up out of the earth again. Does anyone know how he's going to be referred to later on in other chapters? Anybody look ahead? He's going to be referred to as the false prophet. Revelation 16 in verse 13. Revelation 16 in verse 13. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, there's Satan, out of the mouth of the beast, that is the beast that rises up out of the sea, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So here we have the three again, and this beast that rises up out of the earth is referred to as the false prophet. In Revelation 19 in verse 20, referred to as the false prophet again. Then the beast, that is the one that rises up out of the sea, was captured, and with him the false prophet who works signs in his presence, by which he deceives those who receive the mark of the beast and those who worship his image. These two were cast alive in the lake of fire burning with brimstone. So again, he's referred to as the false prophet. In Revelation 20 and verse 10, he's referred to as the false prophet again. The devil who deceived them was cast in the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. So the beast that rises up out of the earth is never referred to as a beast again, but he's identified for us as a false prophet. Now I want you to think about that for a moment. Of course, the false prophet represents something. It's not just an individual who's under consideration as a false prophet or the false prophet. Remember, that which is false is based on mistaken ideas. That which is false deceives. That which is false misleads. A false prophet has a false message. And that message will affect every institution of man, religious, political, and economic. I want you to think about that. False prophets affect every institution of man, the religious institutions, the political institutions, and the economic institutions. So as you think about this, that a false prophet, false religious ideas affect every institution of man, because it's true. Let me give you one illustration. The doctrine of premillennialism, most of you are familiar with that. The doctrine that teaches that Christ is going to come back to this earth, literally rule and reign on David's throne in the city of Jerusalem for 1,000 years. That false doctrine influences even politicians in Washington today. It has for a long, long time. It influences whole nations of people. Not only does it influence, you might say, the political realm, that institution, but it influences the economic institution as well. Why do you suppose the United States supports Israel? Is it because they're the only ally we have in the Middle East? Well, that's some of it. But a lot of it has to do with a lot of false doctrine related to the Israelites as being God's chosen people. So when we think about the false prophet under consideration here, think about the false prophet during the particular period of time when the book of Revelation was written. The beast or the false prophets takes the role of a personal aid to the beast that rose up out of the sea, that is the Roman Empire. This false prophet or beast that rises up out of the earth acts to deceive people into worshiping and serving the Roman Empire. Whereas a true prophet would lead people to worship God, this prophet leads them to worship and serve the state or the Roman Empire. At this time in history, there were many false prophets in Judaism, in paganism, and even in Christianity. And their messages influenced all of society. And this beast from the earth or false prophet represents all that is false in the name of religion. I want you to think about it. All that is false in the name of religion, just even in our own day and time, all that is false in the name of religion influences every institution known to man in the world. Yes, it certainly, as it was true back then, it is true now. All false religious thought influences everything. We don't have time to get in that, but surely you understand that. All right, moving on, Revelation 13 in verse 12. And he exercises all authority of the first beast in his presence. So this false prophet exercises all the authority of the first beast. Now remember, I said this false prophet represents all that is false in the name of religion. All that is false. It wasn't just false prophets connected with Christianity. Paganism had their prophets. Judaism had their prophets. As a matter of fact, who was persecuting Christians throughout the book of Acts? Wasn't the Romans. It was Judaizing teachers who were holding to Judaism. And Judaism greatly influenced all the persecution that was being heaped upon the early church in the beginning. Why did Paul have to flee from one city to the next? Because of the Judaizing teachers, because of Judaism, because it was that which was false in the name of Judaism. There was nothing wrong with Judaism in and of itself. It was the law of Moses and the prophets. And when it was used correctly and appropriately, it was fine. But there were many who did not use it correctly and appropriately. And it was true with pagan prophets and paganism as well. And we'll get down in the text and speak about some of them in just a moment. Revelation 13 and verse 12. And he, that is the false prophet, again, he's not named the false prophet in this chapter, but that's the one under consideration. All that is false in the name of religion, he exercises all the authority of the Roman Empire in his presence. Note this. And he causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. He causes the earth, again, the word earth there ought to be land. And it's understood in the sense of the people of the land. He causes the people of the land of Israel to worship. And you say, well, what about those who dwell in it? Note, and those who dwell in it. The people of the land of Israel were Jews. But there were others who dwelt or lived or inhabited that land as well. They were Gentiles. And so this false prophet, that is, that which is false in the name of religion, caused, you might say, everyone who was not a true worshiper of God to worship the Roman Empire. Verse 13, Revelation 13. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. He, that is the false prophet, performs great signs. Now, don't be misled about the language of this verse, because all that is false in religion has always used pseudo-miracles to deceive, beguile, and mislead people. It's present in our own day and time in false religion. People would use tricks to deceive people into thinking they performed a miracle. There was no different back during this particular period of time than it is today. What about all the way back to the book of Exodus in chapter 7 and verse 11? But Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers. So the magicians of Egypt, they also did in like manner with their enchantments. What did Moses do? He performed miracles by the power of God. What did the soothsayers and the sorcerers and the magicians in Egypt do? They performed miracles too, pseudo-miracles. Some of them were evidently evidently they thought, wow, that's just like God. What a great power of God. Remember what the people in Samaria thought about Simon the sorcerer? He had the great power of God. How? Did he really perform true miracles? No, he deceived people. He beguiled people. He tricked people. And so all that is false in the religion, they use that. Even today, they use that to deceive people and mislead people. How did they get people to worship the Roman Empire, to worship the emperors? Because of the gullibility of the people. They couldn't tell what was true and what was false. Note this about false prophets. Matthew 7 and verse 15, Jesus said, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves." Matthew 24 and in verse 11, the chapter regarding the destruction of Jerusalem. "Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many during this particular period of time we're studying about." Matthew 24 and in verse 24, "For false Christ and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect." 1 John 4 and in verse 1, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." I could read multitudes of passages regarding false prophets who are deceiving during this particular period of time. I mentioned Simon the sorcerer a few moments ago in Acts chapter 8 and verse 9 and following. What about Acts 13 and verse 6? "Now when they had gone through the island of Paphos, they found a certain sorcerer, a false prophet, a Jew whose name was Bar-Jesus." What about Acts 19 and verse 11? "Now God worked unusual miracles by the hands of Paul, so that even handkerchiefs or aprons were brought from his body to the sick, and the diseases left them, and evil spirits went out of them. Then some of the itinerant Jewish exorcists took it upon themselves to call the name of the Lord Jesus over those who had evil spirits, saying, 'We exorcise you by the Jesus whom Paul preaches.' Also, there were seven sons of Sceva, a Jewish chief priest, who did so. And the evil spirit answered and said, 'Jesus I know, and Paul I know, but who are you?' Then the man in whom the evil spirit was leaped on them, overpowered them, and prevailed against them." There were many false prophets. Not just false prophets associated with Christianity. Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying that every institution of man is influenced by religious false doctrine. Revelation 13 and verse 14. "And he deceives those who dwell on the earth." I want you to note the earth again. That is, he deceives those who dwell in the land, because that's the land under consideration, the land of Israel. "He deceives apostate Israel." Now, apostate Israel don't need any help, because they're just becoming like the nation that was carried away into Babylonian captivity. When the people of Israel was carried away into Babylonian captivity, they actually had idol gods set up in the temple already. The people of this day wasn't far behind, because there were pagan temples everywhere. Paul deals a great deal in the book of Romans and 1st and 2nd Corinthians with idolatry, meat sacrificed to idols and things of that nature. Idols, temples were everywhere. Remember when Paul was in Athens on Mars Hill? He had traveled through the city, and it seemed to be an altar to every god that ever existed. On every street corner there were so many altars. And so paganism was filled the Roman Empire. Again, Revelation 13 and verse 14. "And he deceives those who dwell on the earth," that is, in the land, "by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast," that is, the Roman Empire, "telling those who dwell on the earth," that is, in the land, "to make an image to the beast," that is, to the Roman Empire, "who was wounded by the sword and lived." Well, what eventually happened? Well, Even from the time of Julius Caesar that we mentioned last Wednesday evening, remember the Senate identified him as demigod. That is, they identified him as divine. And from that time on, the emperors would be identified as deity. And many of them had temples built, and their statues and images erected in those temples. Some of the cities that we studied about in chapter 2 and chapter 3 in the book of Revelation in Asia already had temples to Rome in those cities. And so it was simply throughout the Roman Empire. Note, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. To make an image to the beast for the purpose of honoring and worshiping the beast. That is, honoring and worshiping the Roman Empire. You know, they were worshiping all other gods. They might as well worship Rome. They might as well worship the emperor. All right, we're out of time. Let's do one more verse. We're waiting for some to come in. Revelation 13 in verse 15. He was granted, that is, that pronoun refers back to the beast that came up out of the land, the false prophet, represents all that is false in the name of religion. He was granted power to give breath, note this, to the image of the beast. Now I want you to look at this very closely. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So this false prophet, all that is false in the name of religion, gives breath to the image of the beast. That is, here you have, we might say, an image of one of the Caesars placed in a temple. And the false prophet gives him breath to cause him to speak. Literally, no. The language of this verse, as I said earlier in another verse, should not confuse you. Because we all know that idols of stone speak, don't we? We all know that idols of stone speak. Well, at least gullible people say they speak. How many of you, on occasions in life, you know, the Catholics hold Mary to be deity. They've elevated her to divinity. And someone will see perhaps a statue of hers, and they bow to these statues, get on their knees before them. And someone would perhaps say, I saw teardrops falling from her eye. They have made the image come alive. The same thing is true about one sees the image of Christ hanging on a cross. And they say, I saw drops of blood falling from his hands and his head. They make the image come alive. All the gods in the Greco-Roman world were not just stone to those who worshiped them. They believed that gods inhabited those pieces of stone. And those gods from time to time would give oracles. What about the prophets of Baal on the mount with Elijah, as when Elijah was in a contest with them to see whose God was the greatest? Remember, they cried out to their God, wanting him to respond. Why were they doing that? Because he had responded in times past. As a matter of fact, even when Jesus spoke, remember, some thought it was angels from heaven, or God speaking from heaven. It was angels from heaven speaking. People were as gullible back then as they are now. And so, these stone images that were set up to worship the emperors and to worship the empire, they didn't really breathe and they really didn't speak. People gave them that. They attributed that to them. And so it really did not happen. But one would say, when Caesar spoke, his image spoke. All right, we're out of time. Wore you out. Revelation 13, verse 16, we'll pick up here next Wednesday evening.